Hello, I'm Mark Steiner. President Bush's veto of the Democrats' plan for Iraq illustrates the political divide over the war right now. Despite the differences, both sides tend to find common ground in their respect for our military. In the political discourse, soldiers and heroes are all but synonyms. Are our soldiers being treated as heroes should be treated? Why are so many veterans having trouble accessing medical care and benefits that they need upon returning home? At the same time, congressional hearings last week paint disturbing pictures of heroic myths being falsified, as in the cases of Corporal Pat Tillman and Private Jessica Lynch. What role did the administration play in these deceptions? How about the media? And what about the deception that started the war? Join me and our guests for a discussion of these issues after this NPR news break. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner. We have all been looking at the press and seeing what's been written and going on in the U.S. Congress, especially around the issues of what was real and what was not real around Jessica Lynch and Pat Tillman. It has raised once again the whole issue of the press and our government and why we went to Iraq in the first place. And some people are arguing the complicity of the press in all of that, if not lies, then clearly untruths about what led us to the war was Niger, weapons of mass destruction, Al-Qaeda and Saddam. But it's larger than that. And so the question of how we create heroes now as a way of pushing the war with Jessica Lynch and Pat Tillman and juxtapose that with what we're actually doing for the men and women who are returning home. We'll be joined this hour to look at all that with our three guests. Shelton Rampton is a research director for the Center for Media and Democracy and the author of two books, The Best War Ever, Lies, Damn Lies and the Mess in Iraq, and Weapons of Mass Destruction, the Uses of Propaganda in Bush's War on Iraq. Joe Leonardo is a former Republican candidate for Congress in Pennsylvania, a Navy veteran and an independent writer on the war and other issues facing America. And Joshua Kors joins us as well, who is a freelance journalist based in New York, who wrote the article in The Nation investigating the veterans' benefit scandals that have caused such a stir in this country and in the U.S. Congress. And before we turn to Joe Leonardi and Sheldon Rampton, we're going to spend a few minutes just talking to Joshua Kors for an update. He was on our show on March the 27th, where he talked about his article in The Nation that talked about Specialist John Town and other soldiers who have been misdiagnosed by the Army with personality disorders and denied benefits. It caused a stir in Congress, but also caused a stir in the show because though the Army wouldn't come on the program that day, we read a statement and posted it on our website signed by Lieutenant Colonel Bob Tallman, who said they were actually doing something about the issue. And we received notices from Joshua Kors in the intervening time that was patently false, and to be in touch with Lieutenant Tallman, and also has a new update on the case of John Town and other soldiers and what Congress is doing about it. So let's go there first. And Josh Kors, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Good to be with you, Mark.
So Josh, tell us what's happened since that moment. Give us a little retrospective of our conversation then and what's happened since then.
Sure. Well, I came on earlier with Specialist John Town, who was wounded by a rocket in Ramadi, Iraq, went largely deaf because of the explosion, and was given a Purple Heart to honor his wounds. But when it came time to discharge him, the Army decided that his deafness was actually caused by a pre-existing personality disorder, and discharging him through the personality disorder mechanism, they were able to prevent him from collecting disability or medical benefits for the rest of his life. And Mark, again, the significance of John's story is that so many are in his shoes. In the past 6 years alone, 22,500 soldiers have been discharged with this personality disorder. Cheating those veterans out of their benefits is saving the military $12.5 billion in disability and medical care.
And so since the time we were on the air together, March 27th, talking about this case, and John Town was there, and we did invite the U.S. Army to join us and the Pentagon, but they declined. But we read a statement from Lieutenant Colonel Bob Tallman that day on the air. Since that time, you've talked to Lieutenant Colonel Bob Tallman about the case of John Towne and also about the statement they read. It's pretty amazing what he said to you and what the real case was.
It is, it is. You know, the first reaction, the first wave of reaction came from the Congress itself. Several key senators, including Barack Obama, Barbara Boxer, and Joseph Lieberman, have now called for an investigation of this personality disorder scandal. I also spoke with Representative Bob Filner, chairman of the House Veterans Affairs Committee. He got involved, and shortly thereafter, the VA, which had put Specialist Towne at arm's length for 8 months, claiming they lost his paperwork on 5 separate occasions, suddenly did a dramatic 180-degree turn and is now giving him full medical care. So with the Congress snapping into action on his case and with their interest in looking into the larger issue, the onus has really fallen on the Surgeon General, and that's where Lieutenant Colonel Bob Tallman comes in. Tallman, well, first, the Surgeon General, she claimed, Gail Pollack, she claimed that she had no knowledge of these 22,500 soldiers who were being cheated out of disability and medical benefits. Then, when presented a stack of cases, she said her office was going to investigate. They did a 5-month investigation, which, in her words, was thoughtful and thorough. And they determined that all the cases were properly diagnosed. That includes John Towne, whose deafness was seen as personality disorder,
mm-hmm.
Richard Dykstra, whose bilateral hernia was seen as the result of personality disorder. Mark, since we spoke, I've been looking into the case of one soldier who damaged the lens of his eyeball in Iraq. The Army classified that damage as the result of personality disorder.
So what, now, before we get into the other meat of this program, this is important because we covered this and we promised our listeners we'd come back to this. And
yeah.
And I know John Towne could not be with us because he's now gotten treatment. He's in treatment in the Veterans Administration, Veterans Hospitals. Is that correct?
That's right. That's right. So I contacted, the Surgeon General made that statement about thoughtful and thorough. And as you mentioned, Lieutenant Colonel Bob Tallman produced a statement that went even further, said not only had the Surgeon General's office reviewed all the cases presented to her, but they had also reviewed all the cases from the last 4 years at Fort Carson, where Specialist Towne was based, and determined all of those cases to be properly diagnosed. But it turned out that Tallman's statement was a fraud. When I contacted him, he said he had no knowledge of the statement and no knowledge of its contents.
That they just stamped his name at the bottom of the statement.
That's right. He said that the Army likes to stamp an Army face, as he put it, on memos addressing Army issues.
Well,
that's how his name got at the bottom. And so what he did do for me, he directed me to the real author of the memo, Cynthia Vaughn, Surgeon General Gail Pollack's chief spokeswoman, and after 21 phone calls, I finally broke through and got an explanation from her about this investigation. It turns out their investigation was also a sham. In their 5-month thoughtful and thorough review, they didn't interview a single soldier. What they did do is go back to the doctor's offices where the false diagnoses were made and ask the doctors to review themselves. The doctors came back to the Surgeon General and said, yep, we got it right the first time, and they considered that case closed. So I asked Ms. Vaughn how they could consider this a thoughtful and thorough review if they didn't interview a single soldier, and her explanation, I found quite stunning.
What was that?
She said that they didn't Ms. Pollack didn't want to interview any soldiers because these diagnoses and discharges were several months ago, and they didn't feel that these soldiers would have any medically valid information to share this many months later. Now, certainly if Specialist Town had been deaf before joining the Army, he might have remembered that. If his commanders had who had watched him serve for 7 years and earn 12 medals for his performance, thought he was too ill to serve from the first day, you know, they might have had some comments as well. But Ms. Pollock didn't feel that way, and so they concluded without interviewing a single person.
Joshua Kaur, as we're talking to at the moment, wrote the article in The Nation about soldiers, thousands of soldiers have been injured and then diagnosed with personality disorder, which denies them benefits from the Veterans Administration. It was written in The Nation, has caused such a stir that Congress has looked up and many senators are now demanding an investigation. He joins us to have a, so we can have a follow-up on that before we turn to Joe Leonardi and Shelton Rampton, including Josh Kors, to look at the press, the media, and what's going on with the war in Iraq. And we'll come to that in just a minute. With one kind of final look at this with Joshua Kors before we turn the conversation to our other guests and all of you as well. And Joshua, I two things that strike me here. One is, what do you think is going on here with the U.S. Army, with the United States, with the Pentagon denying this many soldiers benefits? I mean, one of the Vietnam vets I talked to the other week about your article and shared it with him said to me, he said, you know, if they were so dysfunctional, why would you even let them in the armed services in the first place? And so, A, what's the motivation? And B, do you think that Senators Lieberman, Baraka, and Boxer are going to open this investigation? What's going to come of it?
Well, that's the big question. Every veterans organization I've been speaking to who's been dealing with these flood of cases in recent years wants one thing: for these wounded soldiers to get a chance to speak in open hearings, in Congress, on camera, before the American people. I think if they bring this story directly to the people, there's no way to deny this anymore. As it is now, the Army is able to get by with flat denials and simply putting it at arm's length, making these 22,000 soldiers invisible. But how they're going to react from here, I think, really is the question. As you know, in the fallout with the Walter Reed scandal, the Pentagon took two actions. It accepted the resignation of Surgeon General Kevin Kiley.
Right.
And it hired the public relations firm LMW Strategies with a $100,000 no-bid contract to put a positive spin on the scandal. How they're going to react to Surgeon General Gail Pollack and this $12.5 billion scandal is really anybody's guess.
And when we come back from this brief break, and we'll get to our other guests and continue this conversation, we'll look at that, because one of our guests, Sheldon Rampton, has written that the Defense Department is spending hundreds of millions of dollars on third-party PR firms to put their own spin on the war. We'll look at that and more about the truth, lies, the war, where it all lives, where it's going. Joshua Kors will remain with us. We'll also pick up a conversation with Joe Leonardi and Shelton Rampton and you at 410-662-8780 and 1-866-661-9309. Or you can write to us at The Steiner Show at WYPR.org, and I suggest you do that. When the phones fill up, we can read your things on the air. Maria in Baltimore and Mary in Chestertown are first two callers up. Hold on. We'll come right back, introduce our guest, start the conversation, and bring the public's voice on the air. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner. We were just talking with Joshua Kors, who wrote the article in The Nation about the soldiers who have, thousands of soldiers who have been diagnosed, quote-unquote, with personality disorder, and they've been denied benefits. It's now being taken up, we hope, by the U.S. Senate, and the man he wrote about is now getting medical treatment because of his article, and others are being paid attention to, and it's the role the press can play in this world if it wants to, and we're going to talk about that aspect of this and more with Joshua Kors and our other guest, Joe Leonardi, who was a Republican candidate in 2006 for Congress in Pennsylvania. He's a Navy veteran and an independent, I guess this is fair to say, and conservative commentator. And Sheldon Rampton, who is research director for the Center for Media and Democracy and author or co-author of two books, The Best War Ever, Lies, Damn Lies, and The Mess in Iraq, and Weapons of Mass Deception, The Uses of Propaganda, and Bush's War on Iraq. And gentlemen, welcome. Good to have all three of you with us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Was that Joe was the first one?
Yes.
Okay, good. Make sure I have the voices in my head here.
Okay.
And you all can join us here at 410-662-8780 and 1-866-661-9309 or write to us at the Steiner Show at WYPR.org. And let me take a step backwards here and start with Shelton Rampton and the move of Joe Leonardi and then Josh Kors and open the phones. And Shelton, you heard the conversation I was having with Josh Kors.
Yes, I did.
And when we look at two things here, let's just start with what you've been writing about, and some people are arguing from right and left, and even in the center, that deceptions around this war and what's been going on run pretty deep. And what Josh Kors has unearthed here, I mean, it's a pretty horrendous thing when you consider what our soldiers have gone through and what they're coming back to face. But I wonder how you put that in the context of what's been going on here in the last 4 years.
Well, since from the very beginning of this war, there has been an ongoing effort to, minimize public discussion and awareness of the actual deaths in Iraq by U.S. soldiers and by Iraqis, and also injuries. In March 2003, the month the war began, the Pentagon sent out a directive specifically stating that there would be no media availability. The media was not going to be invited or allowed to witness the arrival of planes bearing deceased soldiers when they arrived in Air Force bases in Germany and other places. In past military conflicts, presidents like Reagan and Carter and Clinton have actually attended funerals for fallen soldiers, and Bush and the White House very carefully avoided attending funerals because that would become a media opportunity. And the failure to pay attention publicly to the situation of wounded soldiers is part of that. There were complaints, for example, from Disabled American Veterans, which is a long-standing support organization for wounded soldiers, that their own people were actually not being allowed to interview wounded soldiers, which is part of what they normally do to assess injuries and so forth.
Right.
In fact, the first person to actually speak with any passion about the wounded soldiers at Walter Reed Hospital, interestingly to me, was Cher, the singer. She attended, visited Walter Reed in November of 2003 to spend some time visiting with soldiers as a routine morale sort of thing, and was so shocked by what she saw, by the extent of the injuries, that she actually phoned into a radio show and said, "Why isn't anybody paying attention to these guys? Why aren't their needs being addressed?" One of the things about this war is that, for a couple of reasons, we're seeing fewer actual deaths, but more serious injuries. One of those reasons is that since previous wars, medical technology has improved, which means they're able to save people who previously would have died on the battlefield from their injuries. But what that means is that you're seeing people coming back with severe damage to body, with brain injuries, things that those sorts of severe injuries are much more common, and those the problems that soldiers are facing are being kind of hidden away. There's this desire on the part of the nation. I don't think you should lay it all off on the Bush administration to want to buy into certain noble myths about the soldiers, but it's not as easy to face the suffering.
We're looking at our views of the war, the press, and the government in this portion of the show. You're just listening to Shelton Rampton. We're also joined by Joshua Kors and Joe Leonardi. You can join us at 410-662-8780. And Joe Leonardi, I read your piece that you wrote about your response to what happened to Pat Tillman. And the story around that. Before we get to the Tillman story, I wonder what you think about this general sense of of what you heard both of our previous guests talk about in terms of the public discourse on the war, what the government has been saying, and the role the press has been playing in all this?
Well, the public discourse, I think we're at a time now where we are probably, even though there's a lack of information coming out or there's a perceived lack, I think we are actually considerably more informed than at any time in history. You know, the Internet has made the dissemination of news, and sometimes, you know, misfact, not always factual news, but news, you know, more prevalent than it's ever been. And I think at this particular point, there is a groundswell to get us out of Iraq. I don't think there's anyone who could say with any genuine honesty that there's not. And there's people now in the Congress that are starting to move this way. The Democrats, of course, but Senator Chuck Hagel, who I believe is one of the few conservatives left, is actually making a lot of noise for us to come home. And I think that is, he's being vilified by many on the right of the conversations, but I think most genuine conservatives are starting to look to him for some real leadership in this, and the discourse will come around as more and more people start not necessarily talking out about why we got there or, you know, what's going on, but really the mishandling of everything.
Well, I wonder what the three of you think, and Josh, we'll start with you and then go to back to Joe and then Shelton, and then we'll open the phones. What has been going on in the last 4 years, and from your perspectives, between the media and this war, the media and the government? There seems to be a lot of people who are really critiquing where the majority of the press has been, whether it's been the yellow cake in Niger, or the whole issue of weapons of mass destruction, or a mission accomplished, or the role of the private contractors, many other things, not taking care of veterans on their returning home, that have just only now beginning to hit a light of day. Something's been going on the last, from the beginning of this war to now, and there's a lot of critique about the world that you all occupy in the press. Josh Kors?
Well, it's a great question, because the pieces I put together to identify this $12.5 billion scandal were there to begin with. Nobody was hiding these facts. It's just that no one had come along and put the pieces together. And you start to wonder whether the media has just been taking what was spoon-fed to it. You mentioned Pat Tillman and Jessica Lynch a minute ago.
Mm-hmm.
Those hearings, on one hand, they do show how the government is spinning this war. But on another hand, with the media's participation, they make visible who they want to be visible. Pat Tillman makes a great poster child, even if they're revealing the sour aspects of his story. Others, like John Towne, or the thousands of wounded soldiers who aren't getting disability or medical pay, it's so much easier to keep them invisible.
I think in some ways this is, I was thinking about this reflecting on seeing Flags of Our Fathers, Clint Eastwood did. The idea of spinning a war and creating heroes where they may not have existed is not something new in the world of media and the press, but something also deeper is going on here. Joe Leonardi?
Well, yeah, there is something deeper, but what happens, I wrote this in the piece you cited, is people who have served don't need to create heroes. We know the sacrifice these men and women have made, and this is really the first major conflict where it has been made men and women for a sustained period of time. And we realize what has been given up for our freedom. And it is an all-volunteer military. It's an overstretched military. And to sit there and take Pat Tillman, who sacrificed much to go into the military, and this gentleman gave up multi-million-dollar football contract, the celebrity life that goes along with being an NFL player, because he believed his country needed him to go and do battle in Afghanistan. Why that ever had to be blown out of proportion is beyond me, but I was in the military, and I understand what his sacrifice was. It's unfortunate that most in the administration haven't the inkling of what it's like to be a true veteran in the military. And while I never saw combat, I served with plenty who did. And one of a warrant officer of mine, who was a Marine warrant officer, and a warrant officer, someone who was enlisted first, pulled me aside one day when we were talking. We were off the coast of Thailand, and he said, "Always remember one thing. Those that cry the loudest for war have never known the horrors of combat." And that really seems to be what's going on, that they have to play this John Wayne mentality of the swashbuckling, strapping military person, or as Jessica Lynch, who bravely went in front of a committee and stated, "Little girl Rambo." There's no reason for that. We know what the heroes are like. Every person in this country, I believe, whether they are for the war or against the war, realizes that these people are heroes. This isn't the Vietnam era when the people are coming back and being spit upon, called names. They're being welcomed back by those that are for the war and those that are opposed to the war. So why someone had to do this? And I genuinely believe in the administration. It probably came from Karl Rove's office, and not because Karl Rove's an evil genius, because that's his job in the administration. So why we're doing this, though, still escapes me.
Does it escape you as well, Shelton?
Well, I think there are two kind of big probably three overarching reasons why the media was so uncritical in passing on myths rather than reality about these aspects of the war. One that keeps coming up, and that it's interesting, we keep hearing words like Rambo and John Wayne. These are movie actors, and I think we should not underestimate the extent to which the tapes that are running in all of our heads, the myths through which we view reality, have been shaped by Hollywood. When Jessica Lynch was rescued, Time magazine quoted a military official saying that her rescue was just like the movie Black Hawk Down, except that nothing went wrong. There's a desire to filter our experience through these myths that are being created for us in Hollywood about damsels in distress and leave no soldier behind and resolute warriors and invincible granite-jawed heroes like John Wayne and so forth. And that's certainly part of it. Another part of it, I think, is the whole aura of that surrounded Bush following 9/11, the reluctance by many people to criticize him because we were seen as a nation in war and crisis. But a third thing I think that's very important in all of this is the fact that for the past 4 years we've essentially had, until the elections of November, we've essentially had a one-party state in the United States. And one of the things that drives media coverage of issues is conflict, and specifically conflict between different branches of government. During the Clinton administration, you had a Republican Congress and a Democratic president, and investigation after investigation of Clinton's activities by Republican-headed committees. During the past 4 years, there's been very little of that, and which has given the administration more or less carte blanche to dictate the agenda and frame the issues. It would be very nice, I think, if our mass media and our journalists actually went out and investigated stories on their facts. But the reality of how the media works is that they require things like government investigations or clashes between the various institutions of government before they generally get involved and start reporting in a serious way.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back with Shelton Rampton, Joshua Kors, and Joe Leonardi, and go right to the phones when we return as we look at kind of deceptions in this war by the press and our government, and how do we have to find the truth, and how where we have to ferret it out about where we are going with all this. 410-662-8780, 1-866-661-9309, or write to us at the Steiner Show at WYPR.org. We will have an email here from Harrison, but we'll start off with a phone call from Maria in Baltimore, and then Mary in Chestertown. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner. We're looking at press, media, the government, and the truth about this war in Iraq with our guests. Joshua Kors, who joined us before, is a writer, and his article in The Nation opened up an investigation and a real hullabaloo over the issue of the Army classifying thousands of soldiers who've returned home with personality disorder so they will not have to pay for veterans' benefits. At least that's the accusation. Joe Leonardi is a veteran and a 2006 Republican candidate for Congress in Pennsylvania's District 11 and a independent writer. And Sheldon Rampton is Research Director for the Center for Media and Democracy and the author of books like The War, The Best War Ever, Lies, Damn Lies, and The Mess in Iraq. 410-662-8780, 1-866-661-9309, or write to us at the Steiner Show at WYPR.org. And Maria in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Hi, Mark.
Hi,
thanks
Maria.
For taking my
thanks
call.
For calling.
It's Maria Allwine in Baltimore.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm with the Pledge of Resistance, a local peace group here in Baltimore that's opposed the war
right.
through civil resistance since before it started. I want to make the point, and it's something that the mainstream media, for obvious reasons in that it's owned by large corporate interests, never discusses, and that is that the foreign policy of this country, and this has reached its apogee with the Bush administration, but the foreign policy of this country is determined primarily by business interests, by what's going to make the world safe for corporations to do business in various countries, and what natural resources can we extract and make our own. And, you know, the oil in Iraq. And even though a lot of people say, it wasn't the oil, of course it was. Of course it was. We wouldn't be there if the Middle East didn't have oil. And the mainstream media not only fell down on the job, I mean, they should be utterly ashamed of themselves, but they never will be. They've done what their corporate masters told them to do. And as long as the general American voting public, the citizens, normal people, continue to get their information from the mainstream media, most notably television and most of the print media,
right.
We're going to do this over and over and over again. I mean, Americans have been spoon-fed so many lies, let's just, you know, just about Iraq, among other things, but so many lies that people really don't know much anymore, and people sit down and they watch Fox News or whatever it is, and they think they're informed, and they're not. I've been TV-free for 10 years. I know
okay.
more now than I've ever known.
Maria, let me let you go back to our guest here for a moment and kind of pick up on a couple of points here. And one is that two aspects of this. And it was interesting in the article in the Sunday Times by Frank Rich that that the New York Times has decided not to allow its correspondents to attend the White House Correspondents' Dinner, that they will not take part in that. And there is a question here that people often raise, whether or not many of our national reporters and the media itself is just too cozy with power to report on it with any depth, and whether that's real or not. I was talking to one of my producers today before we went on the air about this, and just the idea that even here in Baltimore, you know, whether you spend all your time being friends with the mayor, the governor, and all the politicians, and then you have to cover them, and you have to be very careful about that. And I wonder if the press at large is just too cozy with power to really tell the real story. Let me start with Joe Leonardo and go to Joshua Kors and then Shelton.
Of course they are. That's really become a given as of late, and I think it's become a phenomenon because of really the 24-hour news cycle. And unfortunately, the 24-hour news cycle isn't genuinely news all the time. A lot of it is littered with opinion, from CNN to MSNBC to Fox News, the big three cable news networks. And it also becomes a matter of access, though. If you're not chummy with the people, you're not going to get leaked the story, and you might actually have to go out and investigate it. I wonder how much of this really stems from almost, I don't like to accuse people of anything I don't know, but for lack of a better term, laziness. What was the biggest thing about the Scooter Libby trial? I read a lot of different places, was the relationship between a Tim Russert or another journalist really became exposed through that whole trial. Sure, it's a definite problem, and I don't know how we ever really step back from that. I think the internet with not like myself who just writes opinion, but those who actually investigate stories and are trying to either do it out of a sense of pride, or they're trying to, you know, establish a career through the internet, they may be the ones who are exposing information. I mean, the most, you know, probably most famous example is Matt Drudge. I mean, Matt didn't really, you know, I mean, his website is just a portal. But years ago when he made the leak on the Monica Lewinsky scandal, it really opened up a different area where we get our information, and I think that was due to digging and having the not being fettered by an editor to go ahead and publish it.
Josh?
Well, you know, to answer Maria's question, I think the media is blaming itself. I just returned from the Columbia Journalism School Alumni Weekend, and it seemed every speech by my fellow graduates, all of them very prominent journalists, was excoriating themselves for how cozy and blind they had been before the war in Iraq. I think the question is not how have we erred, but where can we go from here? And I think the answer there is twofold. One, it's by choosing better stories, by choosing the veterans groups that aren't being paid attention to, by looking at the senators that are recognizing the costs of this war, and also by using a sharper pen to make them come alive in a way that doesn't need to be filtered through these archetypes like Rambo, like an NFL star.
And, you know, Sheldon Rampton, on the way back to the phones here, one of the things that always struck me, and I was thinking of the other thing that Maria was saying when she called in, was that I have seen very little written about the contents of the oil legislation that America wants the Iraqi parliament to pass. When you read it, if you take the time to look at it, it is clearly a document that opens the doors to three major companies to come into Iraq to exploit the oil in the name of Iraq, but Exxon, Shell, and BP. But nobody ever talks about that. I mean, no one has ever really done an article that I've seen that investigates what that legislation is that we're so desperate for Iraq to pass.
I think that's a good point. You know, part of the reason you never see discussion of that, of course, is because it involves detail and substance, and one of the real failures of the American mass media is a difficulty in a real absence of detailed investigative reporting that delves into the specifics of things like legislation, or in this case, the Iraqi oil bill that you're talking about. And I think, you know, I've been grappling myself with the question of how much this war has been a direct reflection of a desire to grab Iraq's oil. That's sort of the thesis crudely stated. I think there's no question that the involvement of the United States and, for that matter, other powers in the Middle East is primarily driven by the main reason the rest of the world is interested in the region is because they've got oil. But the paradox to me about Iraq is that it seems to me that we have made such a mess of the country that it's actually going to be harder to extract and exploit that oil in the current conditions of instability than it would have been if we had simply bought it from Saddam Hussein. So this may well be a case where sheer ideology has actually triumphed over the kind of direct financial interest and greed that your caller is describing.
Let me go back to the phones here and read the email on the way, then we'll go to Mike and Mary, or Mary then Mike, very quickly here. Harrison wrote in, "I wish I were shocked by the news that the Army is misclassifying veterans in order to save money on benefits, but I'm not. Not only is this not the first time I've heard about this type of thing, but I think you're right in suggesting that the press needs to play a stronger role in uncovering the issue. It's really not surprising, considering the president wants to hide the cost of this war in order to maintain public support. What he is doing in this instance is absolutely unconscionable, and there needs to be investigations into how this happened." And Joshua Kaur's story opened that. Let's hope that the U.S. Congress really follows up and we have some answers. 410-662-8780. And Mary in Chestertown, you're on the air.
Yes. For one thing, John Stewart had McCain on the other night, and he asked him some really hard questions, which, of course, no other correspondent would do. And it's ridiculous that Sunday after Sunday, these people come on television and there's nothing really of substance. They're afraid because they won't have access. So my question has to do with, time and time again, on various interviews, President Bush has said, we must prevail in Iraq because they'll follow us home. That's putting it in a short way. First of all, no one has asked, where is the evidence for this? And is there any? Of course, I don't think so. But I've talked to people who are pro-war, and they will say, if we don't fight them there, they're going to come and kill us on the streets of Chestnut Hill, Pennsylvania, or something like that. You know, it's so ridiculous, and I think this is one prime example where the press has really fallen on its face. Thank you.
Mary, thanks so much. I mean, it was from the beginning of the war when the administration was talking about the Al-Qaeda-Saddam link that we saw very few in the press pick up that story and say it doesn't exist. Josh Kors?
Let me go back and defend journalists for a moment.
Please do.
Several of my friends are also prominent journalists, and they mention this catch-22. If they ask the tough questions, if they ask, how is it possible they're going to follow us home to Pennsylvania, they're not allowed to ask the next question at the next press conference. And if they can't ask the question at the next press conference, they don't get an answer, they don't get a quote, they get fired because they have no material to present. So it goes both ways. They want to protect their job. At the same time, they want to press as far as they can without losing access.
Can I jump in here?
Who's that? Sheldon?
This is Sheldon, yeah.
And then we'll write to Joe. Go ahead, Sheldon.
Yeah, I'd just like to point out that that whole way of understanding the problem is based on a certain assumptions that the way you get the story is by getting quotes from official sources. And that is one of the longstanding habits of the media that I think really needs to be questioned. The idea that your access consists of being able to get official sources to give you quotes that you can stick in your stories it does exactly what you're describing there. It makes it impossible for people to report the news as anything but official spin. And there are other ways to get the story. There's a long tradition of investigative journalism that involves, not talking to official sources and instead digging information out of documents, out of getting it from, the stenographer in the secretarial pool or from other sources who are willing to talk, who are not the prominent official sources that everyone has deemed are newsworthy.
Julian, are you making a comment here before we move to the next caller?
Sure, yeah. When they mentioned the Al-Qaeda link, and I've always been fascinated by this because I never really, bought into it myself. But Al-Qaeda in Iraq is an outgrowth of our occupation of Iraq. And until we realize that, we're always going to buy into this propaganda. I mean, Vice President Cheney on Rush Limbaugh show, they keep saying it enough, and I guess they figure, the old adage, if you repeat it often enough, it becomes at least believable. But I think what's happening now is a reversal in that Al-Qaeda in Iraq is an outgrowth of our occupation. There's still Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan, Pakistan, and they are going to come here again, no matter what we do. We might be able to prevent it through tightening our borders, screening better, things that we're really not doing because we're spending so much money in Iraq that we're really not taking care of the home defense. And to use a football adage, the best offense is a great defense, and we're not focusing on our own defense at home. So this Al-Qaeda link, people have to realize Al-Qaeda in Iraq is an outgrowth of our occupation in Iraq.
Joe Leonardo has the independent conservative Common Sense Oasis on the web. Joshua Kors is a writer whose article in The Nation opened up a firestorm around what we're doing with veterans and classifying them so they cannot get their benefits. He's been on the show before. Sheldon Rampton is research director for the Center for Media and Democracy and author of a number of books, and co-author including Weapons of Mass Deception, The Use of Propaganda in Bush's War on Iraq. 410-662-8780, 1-866-661-9309, or write to us at the Steiner Show at WIPR.org. And Mike, in Hunt Valley, you're on the air.
Just a first comment, I would like to just respond to one of your guests who said that he wanted to say something in defense of his fellow journalists, and that is that the problem is that if you ask a tough question, you won't be asked to ask any other questions in the future. Well, that's not a defense of journalists. That's a defense of a careerist or possibly even maybe a stenographer, but to call such a person a journalist is, I think, unfair and is not an accurate description of that word. There's some controversy now as to what you do call a journalist. Is Deborah Norville a journalist, or is Katie Couric a journalist, or is Frank Rich a journalist? Or unfortunately, journalism has become careerism and personality much more so than it has ever been. But that really wasn't the main reason why I wanted to call. What's happened here actually, is that the reason why the mainstream media is not interested in reporting the whole story about Iraq and what's going on there is simply because the mainstream media has an interest in the usurpation and the use and purpose of the U.S. Armed Forces for corporate purposes. That's what's happening here. The reason why our armed forces are in Iraq is to control and get control of the oil in that country. The increasing nationalization of oil fields around the world has been very distressing to Western oil corporations, and this is the pushback. These MSM or mainstream media corporations see this happening and are really very, very pleased to see that the U.S. government at this point is really, the governance is corporate, and the U.S. government, the political government, essentially is willing to put the U.S. Armed Forces at the disposal of corporate purposes. And that's, I think, probably the biggest story here, which nobody's reporting on. You can't say the word oil without someone rolling their eyes on the issue in Iraq. And the other thing, too, on this is with regard to the Iraqi Hydrocarbon Council law, which you were talking about.
Right.
This is a law, as you probably know, if you had read the New York Times about 4 or 5 weeks ago, there was an op-ed piece that the New York Times, of course, with Mr. Keller being the editor-in-chief there, printed with so many fallacies. It was written by Khalilzad, our ambassador to Iraq at the time, and he was saying what a wonderful law this Iraqi Hydrocarbon Council law would be for the Iraqis because it would put so much money into the coffers of Iraq. Well, the fact of the matter is that the Iraqi Hydrocarbon Council, and of course hydrocarbons mean oil, essentially puts money in the pockets of Chevron, ExxonMobil, and BP, and Shell to a lesser degree. And what it does also, an interesting aspect of the law...
We're almost out of time here.
Allows CEOs from Western oil companies to sit on this council to direct Iraqi oil policy. This is something that was written, actually, in a letter responding to the op-ed piece by Khalilzad about 3 days later in the New York Times. You can look it up, but there are no other articles about this. Well, this is the most important issue of what's going on at the war right now.
Mike, I'm sorry to interrupt you, because you said something really important, and we only have about a minute left, but I think that the notion of this collusion is that deep is something we should talk about. We don't have much time now, but I'm glad you raised the issues about the oil, which I was trying to do, because I think that that's an untold story anywhere in the press at the moment. Nobody really understands what's going on here. But who was trying to say something very quickly, Shelton? Was that you?
Joe. That was me, Joe.
Josh, go ahead. Make it very fast.
Joe. Yeah, just real quick. I don't know why this is news that it's about oil. We've been fighting for resources of this planet since the beginning of time. The history of the Middle East is Saudi Arabia being broken two or three times to keep the price of oil down, and I don't see how anyone doesn't believe that oil is at least a big part of this.
And I wonder, I guess maybe we can come back the next time to kind of look at, is this collusion as deep as we think? And we'll talk about that on another show here. Josh, of course, thank you so much for being with us, and thank you for the investigative work you're doing.
Thank you, Mark.
You're bringing stuff to light that needs to be brought to light. Joe Leonardo, pleasure to have met you for the first time, and we look forward to having you back.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Same with Shelton Rampton, and thank you for your work in keeping the eyes on what the media is doing.
Thank you.
And thank you all for writing in and calling in. We will come back to the subject. You can bet on that. The Mark Steiner Show is produced by Marcus Charleston, Jessica Phillips, and Justin Levy. We're directed and engineered today by Justin Levy. John Ahrens is ill. I want to thank Karma's Cafe at 32nd and St. Paul for providing lunch for our guests. They are open for dinner Thursday, Friday, and Saturday now, so don't miss that. I think they have barbecue pork coming up tomorrow night. And we're podcasting. Go to WIPR.org to download this and any of our other programs. And I'm Mark Steiner for 88.1 WIPR, your NPR news station. Take care.